We are live, pal. Andrew Zarian and me, Double G, here. It is a very AEW week out here in the Bay Area, Andrew. And the only thing that is not cool is that you are not here this week, because that would have been an absolute blast.
Unfortunately, I am not there. Too much going on right now. It's like the most hectic time in my life. I don't think I've had more of a hectic personal schedule and career schedule happening at the same times. But I will be at the AEW show in Long Island in April.
There you go. When is that?
I think the first, it's right around WrestleMania. I think like the first, whatever that first Wednesday is in April.
There you go. So right, so it's like post WrestleMania, post like
April 5th. Yeah, April 5th.
The week after. So yeah, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Man, there's so much news that is out there concerning both of these companies. Why don't we start WWE first, and then we'll just, because this is going to be heavy AEW with them being in the Bay, and I'll be at all three shows.
You know, for someone that really doesn't like AEW, Garrett, you surely go to a whole lot of AEW shows, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Somehow I don't like AEW. It was weird. When I did that show with Dave on Friday, where we went over all of the awards, I was looking at it from the perspective of WWE was pretty successful, yet, you know, AEW still was the more popular with the observer readers. And so I was trying to point out that, you know, yeah, WWE had a good year. Maybe they didn't win these awards, but, you know, still. And I got a lot of feedback, not really a lot, but some feedback saying that I was too pro WWE. And in the past, and you've gotten this too, you know, we're too pro AEW. And then in some instances, you yourself have also been too pro WWE, so who knows? Like, the only thing that I know about this is the broadcaster Joe Buck, who is now on ESPN. He used to do the World Series, and he said he would get equal feedback from both sides saying that he hated their team during a series.
And that, well, I agree with that. Joe Buck hates the Mets, hates New York franchises. I'm not a big fan of Joe Buck. No, listen, I actually had a question because I listened to the show you did with Dave, and there was a lot of criticism over Booker of the Year, right? Yes. That was the big one. And I voted for, I guess I'll go into it, right? I voted for Tony.
Yes.
But only because of the first half of the year.
Yes.
The second half was untouched at that point. When did the voting go into effect? When was this?
It's a January through December 31st. So right when the year ended, then that's when people started throwing in their ballots.
I would say the first half of the year, Tony did a great job up until the Punk debacle, and then Triple H. You know, the summer Triple H really kicked it off, and the Bloodline stuff. But the way that I gauged it was, what other hot act is there other than the Bloodline storyline? If I take that out of the equation, how much more interest do I have in the WWE product at the time that I voted? And it really, you know, Cody wasn't back yet, right?
Yeah.
So I can't count that. And to be honest, the only real hot feud was Roman, and the Roman stuff didn't pick up till the second half of the year to the level that it did. And I've enjoyed AEW as far as a program more. Now, do I feel the same way today? Yeah, generally I enjoy AEW's product more because the wrestling is catered towards me. That's why he was the Booker of the Year for me. However, 2023 is going to be, could be a very different story. It is going to be a whole different story. And I have no problem saying that it was Hunter or whoever else.
I think here's what I take away.
Their own personal bias out of it,
which is the hardest part. Here's the story of that award to me, which is, if it's close, then that means that wrestling was probably pretty good, right?
Yeah.
If Tony Khan did a good job and Triple H did a good job, and to me, I may have even had Vince McMahon ranked higher than Tony than Triple H, because Vince basically set the table for everything that Triple H fell into, right? Like he got WrestleMania hot. All the stuff that happened after WrestleMania, all of Vince's fingerprints on it, Triple H then has to sort of deliver the blueprint. I would have probably had Vince a little bit higher, but you can't vote for Vince in these awards because he's this terrible person, which is true. And but people don't want to vote for him for that reason. So that's what's a little bit hard about that specific award. But I thought personally, you had three rightful contenders, and then you saw the Stardom folks come out and really show their voice. So that was really cool with that award as well. Man, but that's why this stuff is fun. Like, you do it.
It's not an official vote. And that's the thing. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be for the readers of The Observer. It's supposed to be for the audience that participates in it. And depending on what your audience is, I would generally think that the Wrestling Observer fan base sways a little bit heavier towards AEW. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I would imagine that there are other brands out there that sway, I don't want to, Fightful or whoever, they maybe sway a different way. It should be fun. There should not be a argument where people are getting threatened over who they thought was the better booker. I think that's insane, absurd. I do have one thing though. How Jon Moxley could not be the Wrestler of the Year this year, it blows my mind, right? And that argument, that was one that I was thinking, I'm like, okay, listen, Roman's freaking the best. I no question about it, but how many times did Roman wrestle this year? Did Roman go to the Indies? Did Roman go to Japan? How many titles did Roman hold that aren't his? You know, I think some of this stuff, you got to take your favorites out of it. Listen, I love Jon Moxley. Is he my favorite wrestler? No, he's not.
Brandon Anderson.
Not because he's not good. I know you and Mox are friends, so I don't want to say anything that's going to get me beat up and bleeding everywhere.
You know, friends is probably not the word. Like, you know, we're acquaintances in some way.
But, yeah, you guys are cool.
But, you know, I have explained to few people who have asked, but I kind of try to stay away from these awards because I think it's almost impossible, like you're saying, to not be biased or influenced by certain things. And I may have a relationship or an email thread going with certain folks, or I may be closer to a situation. So I don't want that to interfere. So I've kind of just not voted the last few years. I remember the first time when Moxley won the Wrestler of the Year, this was a couple years ago, I told him, I was like, yeah, I just kind of stayed away from the voting because, you know, as I do this more with Dave, you meet more people, you talk to more people. And it just felt like I needed to pull myself out of that.
Yeah.
And he was kind of joking, but he was like, what the F? Like, that was another vote I could have had. He was obviously joking, but, you know, it was like kind of that kind of response. He's like, what do you mean? You're supposed to vote for me. But that whole thing is, you know, I just choose to pull myself out of it. Now, the thing about it, you and I, we grew up in radio. We've talked about this a bunch of times on this show. Howard Stern, you know, sports radio for me was a KMBR in the Bay Area, and I actually got to work there as a college person. And so this awards, what is it for? For Dave, the awards is a snapshot in the history of the year. So Dave can go back to 1989 and go, okay, what was the summary of that year? I'm going to go through all the awards. I'm going to see who won, who lost, what was best, what was worst. And that tells me the story of the year. It's a time capsule for Dave. For everybody else, it is talking point. It is conversation. It is stuff like this that you and I are doing. How many podcasts came out over the last few days where the Wrestling Observer Awards, whether they held them up in high esteem or they just talked about those awards to shit on them, how much content was created based off of these awards? A ton.
I also think I did want to say a couple of people, hey, you idiot. Dave is not the one voting. This isn't Dave's. This isn't Dave Meltzer's Flavor of the Year award. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a communal voting.
He has one vote out of thousands.
He has one vote out of thousands of votes. And I've been following Dave since I was a young adult. I was 17, six, no more. I mean, I've known of The Observer. I had like an uncle's friend that had like would get issues of The Observer. But I've been subscribed for at least over, my God, I'm going to date myself, like 25 years at this point. But I, I've enjoyed Dave. I've enjoyed his coverage. Do I agree with everything Dave says? No, never. No. And you shouldn't. But you know what? That's the great thing, because there are times, if I had the same pro wrestling belief that I did when I was 19, 20 years old, I wouldn't be doing this. You would call me a freaking idiot. You wouldn't want to talk to me. People change. Your thoughts change. Your philosophy changes. What you like changes. And that's fine. That's okay. That's okay yes. to go back and say, you know what? I was wrong here. Or I thought this one was better. I like this wrestling at this point in my life. I was a huge ECW guy. I love that stuff. I find it difficult now to watch a lot of that stuff. And it's okay. It's fine to say, you know what? Maybe it wasn't great. I very much enjoy WWE right now. As of today, I'm watching a ton of WWE. A year ago, Garrett, you and I would talk about this all the time. It was a chore.
Yeah.
And
I was watching the Hulu cut. I was watching the Raw Hulu cut.
Yeah.
And mostly
I watched it live
SmackDown.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it live. And SmackDown I'm watching every week because it's been great. It's okay to like what you like. But to go out there and to berate, you know, Tony Khan becomes a joke. I think Tony didn't help himself with the Ariel Helwani stuff either at this moment. But that's a whole separate thing. But, you know, I like Jon Moxley winning Wrestler of the Year to me was a no-brainer because of the criteria that I have as far as what that means.
Yep.
But I also could see why many, many people, thousands of people or hundreds of people, thought Roman Reigns should be the Wrestler of the Year. And there is an argument for that. And they're right as well. You know what? Roman was Wrestler of the Year to a lot of people. And to me, he wasn't. It was Jon Moxley because of his ability. In an alternate universe, Garrett, CM Punk never gets hurt. And he has this remarkable revitalizing year as World Heavyweight Champion this year.
And he's Wrestler of the Year. Yeah.
Yep.
Could have worked that way.
So, did not work that way. But I do think he's coming back. That's my personal theory.
Okay. And we're gonna talk about that in a second. We'll save that. So, save those thoughts for the second half of this show. Because one of the things you mentioned is WWE, you're much more interested in it. So, I had a question for you, which is, you know, we are doing this show on the last day of February 2023. Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns in the main event of night two at WrestleMania 39. Who goes over in that match? Right now, your gut, your thought on the best option for business. What happens in that match? Who wins?
The best option for business is that Cody wins, because you have a great job. You know, he's been a great baby. He hasn't even chased the title yet, right?
Yeah.
And that's amazing. You're a month away and you haven't had him even begin the chase of the title. You need a strong baby face. That company needs to create an ultimate baby face. I talk about it all the time. Drew McIntyre was that guy. And unfortunately, you know, we entered into the worst era of the 2020s. So far, and we entered into this global pandemic and it stopped the whole world. So no fault of his own. And I do think Drew would have become, you know, honestly, in my opinion, I think Drew would have become like their Hulk Hogan.
Interesting.
I could feel it from people in that company. I felt the momentum shifting as far as, you know, WWE puts out a lot of polls and I got access to some of this. You know, his merch sales were going up. Kid interest was going up. All this stuff was happening with him. And we just shut down the world. Cody has that happening now. Yeah. I know there's a lot of questions regarding Cody and how effective he'll be once he has the title. Forget about that. Because if I told you in 1998 that Stone Cold Steve Austin, early 98, that Steve Austin will have the greatest professional wrestling run of its time, a lot of people would have been, detractors would have come out and said, well, how can a guy in his black underwear become a Hulk Hogan? Mm-hmm. We get that he's over, but how can this guy, or 97, if I told you that he's going to become this big, you know, the biggest wrestler in the world, you got to kind of let things play out. I think this is one of those. I don't think this is a done for Roman and the bloodline once he loses. I don't think this is done for Sammy. I think Sammy has a great story challenging for that title with Cody at one point. But you have to create another star. And you don't really get an opportunity to get a guy that was a former vice president, EVP of your biggest competitor out there in 22 years, the biggest competitor they've ever had. A guy that they acquired that has lineage to the company. that has this tremendous connection to the world title through his father. The story is it's on its own. It's a great story. I if he loses, however, what does that say for creating a top guy? You don't get a Cody too often.
I agree 100%.
And I think a lot of people don't like Cody, just not to like Cody. You know, we saw that in AEW. You know, why was
the promo style? The promo style.
One bad promo?
Well, last night, I watched it. I watched him. He beat Chad Gable, and then he did a promo. And, you know, the enunciating that he does, I could see how that would kind of drive some people nuts.
It's
just over, you know, the overdoing the promo.
The dad stuff. Yeah, the dad stuff is a little much.
That being said, I think he's doing a really good job. Now, here's another reason, in addition to everything that you said. To me, here's the reason why Cody needs to win this title at WrestleMania. It is WWE's best recruiting tool to attract possible free agents. Now,
yes, 100%.
When I say that, obviously that's in relation to the stories about Kenny Omega and when he becomes a free agent. I think his contract technically is up, but he's probably got some injury time that is going to be tacked on, all that stuff. We know the nooks and crannies of that, but anybody from that side, if they maybe don't feel as into AEW, or maybe they just want to test their leverage, maybe they just want to go to the highest bidder, the best way WWE can show those folks that they're not just going to be buried when they come in, and that there's going to be a dynamite program, pun intended, for them, is to show that, hey, we're taking a guy formerly from AEW who in part created AEW because he was upset at us. Now he's here, and we're going to show you that we can do AEW Cody better than AEW can do Cody. So that is the main reason why I think this needs to happen. And all the things that you said, add that one on top of it, and it's got to happen, because if it doesn't, then Cody can still win the title. I know Dave has said this. He could win it at SummerSlam, right? But they're always talking, they themselves, WWE themselves, has created this myth of your WrestleMania moment. There's no such thing as a SummerSlam moment. They don't have that. It's the WrestleMania moment. This is where their entire year peaks, has to be on this stage. Cody has to win this match.
You know, somebody brought up Danielson, and they said, well, think about the tremendous moment that Danielson had. Danielson was never intended to be a long-term champion in that company. You know, they were forced into bending the knee to the audience because of how over he got on his own. It wasn't designed. And when they did try to make it work, it was terrible. Who was his first feud with? Do you remember?
Kane,
right? Because they had nothing for him. They had nothing planned. But with Cody, it's different. They know the plan. They know what they're going to do. They know what they have to do. The other part of this is interesting, right? Who's to say Cody doesn't go back to AEW once his contract's done, right? And what does that do to his brand and his prestige and to AEW, where, you know, this guy was in AEW, he founded the company, goes to WWE, wins the World Heavyweight Championship after being banned from challenging for the world title. Now he has a new contract, and he says, now I want this.
Yep.
That's a great story for a couple years from now.
Yep.
Thinking about that. He's not dumb.
I really like that. I really like that, because I think there is a discussion that is being had that this 1,000 days for Roman is more important, and I disagree. So, Super Producer John, get that segment. We'll put that segment on YouTube as its own. But, you know, I wanted to get your idea. This is a complete tangent. Super Producer, every podcast that you listen to, they call their producer the Super Producer. We need to come up with a better name for John.
There's nobody like John. Suncast is
stupendous
an OG.
Producer.
The stupendous
John Sunk, the stupendous Suncast.
There you go.
One of the greatest podcasting producers of all time. Nobody's been producing podcasts as long as he has. 2009, he started producing podcasts.
There you go. So he'll be stupendous.
But you know what the problem is, dude? When if you see him and he gets upset at you, he's really violent. He just mandible claws you. He just does one of these right in your mouth. And you're like, what the hell was that for? He won't even tell you what it's for. He just shoves his two fingers right in your mouth. It was insane. He was trying to do it in Vegas, but everybody had a mask on, so he couldn't get it in.
That's the counter. That was the counter to his move.
Yeah, he wanted to do it to Dave.
Oh, my God. All right. Wanted to bring up two more things about WWE before we move on to AEW Week in the Bay Area. What did you think of Moonshine Brock last night?
I love that he's like... He's like a Southern man now from Saskatchewan. This guy, this Minnesota boy, he's become a cowboy. What did he gave him moonshine? What did he call
he
it?
He said it was it called White Lightning. He said it was
White Lightning.
Called White Lightning. But the idea was that he made it himself, right? I don't think you can buy White Lightning, you know, at
Sable's
at the
making it in the tub.
Yeah.
In Saskatchewan on the farm.
Oh my God, that's a great vignette. You know what, though? The Rock has Terramana.
Mm-hmm.
Brock should market the White Lightning.
I think he should. I can see the commercial now. Sable is in her negligee from the 90s, churning it in the tub, and Brock comes with a thing and just takes a big scoop with his cowboy hat. You know what? If Vince was booking, that's how they would book that. That would be the vignette.
Okay, but are we sure he wasn't booking?
No, I think he is. I think he's very involved. There was spitting, there was vomiting, right?
Yes, there was MVP spitting the moonshine back in Brock's face. Like, I don't know. I mean, Triple H, obviously, who's a bigger influence than Vince McMahon on Triple H's booking, right? That's who he learned under, and that's so it could simply be like Triple H going like, okay, we have really serious programs. Now we have to like do a little bit of comedy for this baby face, and maybe that's his choice. But I will say I did like Moonshine Brock better than Bobby Lashley and Bray Wyatt and a leotard. That is for sure. I don't know who that booking is for.
Yeah, I don't know. And I listen, you know, I spoke to somebody like a year and a half ago that was there, right? Actually, more than that, right after the pandemic, that's someone that writes there. And he said, listen, after my SummerSlam experience, I had an awakening as to what this product is. And it's the Muppets Variety Hour.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
With jacked up human beings. That's essentially how it was described to me. And I'm like, you know what? Once I saw that, I was like, I know what I'm walking into. This is not a professional wrestling show anymore. It's a show about this family that owns a business and all of their idiot employees for 3 hours. That's what Raw is to me. Mm-hmm. Everybody's incompetent. The referees don't know how to do their job. The wrestlers are all cheaters. The company, you know, the owners, this lunatic. That's how I view that show. And you know what? I'm much happier watching that show like that. I don't watch it as a wrestling show.
Yeah. You know, I will say, I skipped through a lot of the matches. I've seen so many WWE go through a commercial break wrestling matches in my life that I don't even need to see the middle of the match. I need to see the beginning, and then I'll skip through it, and I need to see the end. I know people will say, oh, you know, the wrestling is so much better on Raw these days. I'm like, well, I guess, but I'm not really watching because I just want to see what happens in the rest of the show. I'll watch the wrestling with a microscope on the pay-per-view. But for me, like, the Raw is really just about promos and angles and interviews and segments and, you know, that kind of
stuff.
It's much less about the matches.
Listen, last night's crowd was not into the wrestling, and they had a packed crowd. How many people were in that building? Almost 10,000 people?
It's a lot, man.
It was packed.
That's just the fact of the matter.
Look at this, okay? SmackDown on Friday. It's a sellout. There's like 500 tickets left. They're going to be at like 11,000. They'll announce like 12,000, 13,000 people, but they will legitimately be about 10,000 people. The show on Monday, right? John Cena's return.
John Cena.
11,500. And Logan Paul, right? 11,000 yep. tickets. They moved 1,000 tickets immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hot product. While AEW, you know, look at this. Dynamite on April. Well, this is April. You got some time. You got 5,000 tickets there, 3,000 tickets there, 4,000 tickets there. You know, it's just showing you the pendulum has swung. But I don't think these people are watching the wrestling, a lot of those guys. They're there for the experience.
That WWE is going to do, should do a giant number with Cody and Roman face-to-face on SmackDown. Yeah. And they should do another giant number with John Cena and Logan Paul on Raw. Like, they're just going to be hot. Like, that's just what it is right now. Everything that they're doing is pretty much working, except for Bray Wyatt. Okay. Let's move on to the AEW side of things, because there was quite the interview with Kenny Omega. Now, I didn't hear the interview. I read a Josh Nason's fantastic write-up on F4WOnline.com, where he listened to the interview and he broke down the quotes. It was Renee and it was Kenny Omega talking about what happened last year. I was fascinated. I was like, I thought these guys couldn't talk about it, but he talked about it. Did you see the interview?
I did not. I saw bits and pieces of the interview. It was Renee's session. It's not oral sessions anymore. It's sessions.
No, it's just sessions.
It's just sessions. I by the way, Renee is the best. She's one of my favorite interviewers. She top to bottom, she's unbelievable. There's a children's hospital here, St. Mary's Children's Hospital, right couple blocks away from my house, and her and Mox would go and visit the kids.
Oh wow.
Whenever they were around. It really, when I heard that story, really such great people, both of them. I think it's interesting they're talking about it.
I'm gonna read
Punk is posting stuff now, you know. Yeah. Did you see that? So
let's combine these two things into what is going to happen, because it is very clear to me whether it is the strategy of AEW overall, and I do not put this past Tony, because Tony is so smart. Tony Khan is so smart.
The greatest work of all time.
Well, I don't even know if it's that, but
I'm joking.
But even if it isn't that, how do you create interest in AEW? You just, like, all of a sudden, you know, the week of Revolution, there's people talking about Punk if he's going to come back. There's people talking about Omega. There's people talking about FTR. Like, that, those are the conversations that people are having in on the internet right now. Even with WWE being super hot, this is how you create a little bit of interest.
I have said this. This has always been my perspective on this. Okay. If you can make it work, why wouldn't you? For everybody, right? And everybody involved in this really bizarre scenario, is their wrestling IQ is a million. They are probably the smartest people currently in the, you know, Kenny Omega, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time throughout history. I don't care what you think about his promo ability, being in WWE or not. His in-ring ability alone is probably, you know, I talk about how Danielson's my favorite wrestler. I genuinely think Omega's the best wrestler of all time as far as his in-ring goes. You got the Bucks, arguably the greatest tag team of this generation, right? And obviously there are people that don't like them, but there is a huge following behind them. And CM Punk, how do you not make this work if you can? And at the end of the day, it's a freaking business. I work with people that I despise regularly. I'm not even kidding. Suncast doing the show here. He hates me. You have to see the things that he says to me off the air. See, you just said true. I don't even know if you guys heard that. But
I heard it.
Like, you heard it. I heard it too. I work with people. Like, I mean, one of my clients. They'll never hear this, and they'll never know who I'm talking about, but I hate working with these people. They suck. But you know what? The money is great.
Yeah.
And they leave me alone enough to, and they know that, you know, something, and they don't like the way that I work, and I don't like how they work, but we're able to make money and my results work. For as far as Punk goes, is there a bigger match for AEW today than Punk versus Omega in a singles match? Put a title on the line? is there a bigger tag team match right now than FTR and the Bucks? No. And they need those hot programs. Is there a bigger match than Punk and Hangman again? Or Punk and MJF? Punk and anybody, really, on that
all
top
the
tier.
All the biggest matches involve CM Punk.
Listen, you don't have to like the guy. I know a lot of people, and I don't know Punk. And I can't, I have no opinion of him personally. I just know that he went cuckoo with those muffins. That was something, you know? But
his blood sugar was low.
His blood sugar, it had to have been, dude. That guy was, I mean, the adrenaline was pumping for sure. You know, he just had a great match and he's in there. If you could make this happen, if you could make it happen, you're a fool for not doing it. And I don't think Tony's a fool. I don't think Punk's a fool. I don't think, you know, the Bucks are idiots. I don't think Kenny is a dumb guy. I think these are all very, very smart guys that understand how the business, you know, how to make business and how important it is for them, for this company, for AEW, that if it can work, they have to make it work. Because right now, you know, they're on the defensive. They're not, you know, they're no longer the underdog in this battle where, you know, people are going to gravitate towards you because you're different and young and cool. Now you're in a fight because you're in a contract year. WWE is getting very aggressive with fighting against you. Their product is getting hot. You're on the defensive.
Yeah.
And how do you compete? By having captivating television. You could do that with CM Punk and you could do that with Omega. I actually think it's a big waste that Omega's not doing singles. I think this trios nonsense needs to go away.
Yep.
I think it's more harmful than good having Punk on his... Listen, we also don't know, having Omega. We also don't know. Maybe Omega doesn't feel comfortable right now doing this, you know?
Okay, so hold that thought, because I'm about to read you some quotes from this interview. Okay. So Omega talked about when he was hurt and when he came back last August. This was in... this was for the All Out pay-per-view, him and the Bucks against the Death Triangle for the Trios titles. Like, this is when he's coming back. Quote, "I didn't get it. I was like, what is with this strange atmosphere? What is with this strange aura? Why does something feel so ominous right now? I didn't know, and I couldn't figure it out. Next thing you knew, there was more stuff happening." So,
well, it was a different company
as I see
he came
it,
into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As I see it, he leaves his company, something that he helped build, and he comes back and he looks around and he's like, this doesn't seem the same to me. Okay. So now I'm not saying that these comments by Kenny, and the reason why I'm saying this is because I've interviewed him a few different times and he is the most thoughtful person to speak. He doesn't just go off the cuff, right? He's very thoughtful. Yeah. He's thinking about what he's going to say. So I'm not saying this isn't strategic. He may be setting things up. He's a smart dude, like you said. He then says, "Stranger things started happening. Oh man, what do I do? This isn't right. Someone needs to be the voice of reason. This is silly." So he is basically saying that, you know, what I left and what I came back to was not as good. It was not what we had built. It had changed and for the worse, right? So you could take whatever that is supposed to mean. What it could mean is, you know, the political stuff changed.
Yeah.
Cody leaving, CM Punk coming in. There was possibly a change of what was going on. Who is on, you know, who's close to Punk, which means maybe you're a little bit distance from other folks. So I'm assuming, I don't know what that is, but that's sort of what I took out of that. And then he says, "It's a shame the general public and a lot of people aren't ever going to know how it went down or how it could have been prevented or how it could have ended differently. I don't think anyone is happy that how it happened or is proud that it happened. I think across the board, everyone thinks this is a terrible situation that was unnecessary." So I want to get your thoughts on that quote, because that quote to me says we have distanced ourselves from that. We have thought about it and we realize how stupid it was, which is how most internal fights are, right? There's not a lot of thought put into why you get upset with somebody. So does that tell you that maybe the sides have got out of their emotions a little bit and are thinking about this a little bit differently?
I think that was always Kenny's stance. I don't think, you know, from the backstage, I guess, you know, the You heard stuff and I heard stuff and everybody heard stuff. Kenny was always kind of presented as like the voice of reason in this.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever presented as you know, the aggressor in any way. It's tragic for sure because they were on such a great hot roll and Kenny finally came back and things are getting ready to be, firing on all cylinders and this happens. I really hope for the sake of the story of AEW that they're able to make this into something.
Mm-hmm.
Because if not, if it doesn't turn into something and Punk, they release him and he goes to Japan and does something or whatever, the story will always be that what if, right? This was the moment of AEW's demise. And that should not be the story for this company. It won't be the story for this company, but it also shouldn't, 5-10 years from now, if, who knows what could happen. A lot could change, but if Tony says F this and I don't want to be involved with wrestling anymore or whatever, the story will always be this. This is the bad moment. This is the Hogan politicking in WCW story. This is all of that in one. It's tragic. It's terrible. But I do agree with you. I think Kenny wants to make, if it could work, it's going to work. But I don't know how the Bucks feel.
Okay, two short quotes to finish this off, and then we can move on. He said the fight, this is what Nason wrote in quotes, the fight doesn't dictate what I do or what I say. I'm sure the Bucks are in the same boat. I can't speak to the other parties. Hopefully they're doing well, and I mean that. So, again, Kenny being super thoughtful, super caring, super voice of reason, it does seem that it seems that he may be open for doing something, right? Like that quote doesn't tell me F those guys, never doing business with them ever again. They ruined our great opportunity here.
Yeah. No, and I don't think you should ever have that attitude, because you having that mentality, then you create that scenario more than anything else. Listen, man, who knows? Maybe he won't ever go back to AEW because of what happened, but that doesn't mean that Kenny and him can't have this banger of a match in Japan.
Yeah.
We saw that. I think New Japan show.
I think Tony wants those on his pay-per-view buys, I think.
Well, listen, the real forbidden door here is CM Punk returning more than anything else. You know what you can do? CM Punk could show up. What if he comes up with his title? He never lost that belt.
Yeah.
And he comes in, they call it the international title. They could do something like they did in WCW. It'll be terrible. Have two titles and nobody knows the lineage of it. It'll be great. You could mess up your title lineage like that. I think in all seriousness, I feel that they will make this work. I don't know when, but there's too much money to be made by everybody in a contract year to not make it work. And there have been far worse fights and brawls, far worse public, so much more publicly that happened in the 90s. Far, far worse stuff that never came to the public that happened in the 90s in these locker rooms that, after a while, people made up and they were able to do business, because at the end of the day, that's what matters.
All right. This last quote, I was trying to decipher what this actually meant. Maybe it means nothing. But Nason kind of just summarized what the last quote was and said that Kenny doesn't really have any goals or aspirations at this stage like he did in his younger days when he was motivated to win the G1 or the IWGP.
Who said
or
this?
To have a match of the year. This is Kenny in the same interview.
Okay.
He said that made him question, so this lack of goals or aspirations that he currently has right now made him question his situation and wonders if he's being ungrateful or wasting his time. Now, that may tell us a little bit about his mindset, because to me, there are big goals out there for him, one of which could be the biggest babyface champion in AEW and, let's keep this company, moving up and to the right. The other goal could be go to WWE and become a giant star there. Like, I don't know.
And take the title off of Cody.
Yeah, take that off Cody. Yeah. Now the way that he said that, again, I'm taking it off of Nason's summary, so I didn't actually hear the interview. But I wonder what, like, the lack of aspirations makes him wonder if he's being ungrateful or wasting his time. To me, I'm like, okay, like you said in the beginning of this conversation, Kenny Omega with the trios titles, as fun as some elite fans may think it is kind of a waste of Kenny Omega, right? What does Kenny Omega do best? Well, the trios thing is not utilizing him in the way that he is utilized best. So maybe it's like, yeah, I don't have any goals because I'm kind of just, you know, in these other programs, which are fun, but they're not really super juicy or super interesting or, you know, make me really aspire to be the best or whatever he's saying. So I thought that interview was really fascinating. Whenever he speaks, I pay attention because I think there's a lot of thought going into what he's going to say. He's not just going to say stuff to say stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, for one of the greatest pro wrestlers, I mean, him in Japan, he was remarkable. You know, seeing that Kenny Omega again was unbelievable to me. And this guy has it. He could still do that. But, you know, I brought that up. Same exact point that you said on one of the other shows. And the feedback I got was, what do you want? Him to wrestle, you know, a random match on Dynamite. It's better than him in the trios matches that matter, you know, that are these crazy off the wall matches. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I would watch Kenny Omega and Joey Janela. I know Joey's not there, but I would prefer to watch Kenny Omega and Joey Janela than to watch these trios matches.
Okay, and
it's not doing it for me.
It's not only Kenny, it's also the Bucks, right?
It's also the Bucks, yeah. And look at their tag division. Their tag division right now is a little what did he say? S-A-W-S-T? Sauce? It's a little soft that tag division right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I okay, hope let's Double look. J wins that title. I really do.
Do you?
I want. There's nothing more than I want Jeff Jarrett to win the tag team titles.
That would be
by himself.
Be incredible.
By himself.
Well, Satnam will have to help a little bit because Jeff
Satnam
is still
has to help. Yeah.
Jeff understands how to be heel.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about...
Is this the most likable he's been? I know you want to move on to something, but is this the most likable Jeff Jarrett has been in the pro wrestling world in the last two decades?
I find him very entertaining. I'm just waiting for that overstaying his welcome, which always happens with him, right?
And I great.
It hasn't happened yet, though. I will say that. It has not happened yet. He has not yet overstayed his welcome. So I like the Jeff Jarrett thing because... to lead into stuff like obviously AEW is here in the Bay Area. I know AEW is in San Francisco and, you know, they're going to do media. So hopefully Dave and I can do some stuff if it's doable with Dave's schedule, because I think he's pretty much tied to his house until he gets that Observer finished. He is not. I don't think he's going to Dynamite either. He as far as I know, he's not going to Dynamite. He's going to watch it at home because he's got to do so much
stuff. Are you going to Dynamite?
I'm going to Dynamite. And nice. What I want to say is, you know, folks who are coming out this way for this show, I don't sense that it's a giant travel show, but, you know, people who do stuff like us who are doing podcasts or content creating, writing, whatever you're doing, like, reach out to me. Let's sync up. I'd like to meet, you know, a lot of people. A lot of it is also, I want to meet people who do the same stuff as us, and then we can bring them on this show or Mat Men or Fight Game Podcast or whatever. So, come find me, reach out to me on Twitter if you're coming in, would love to meet up. I will be at all three shows. I will be at Dynamite, I will be at Rampage, and then obviously the pay-per-view. You mentioned the ticket sales coming up for Dynamite. Now, I understand why Tony Khan did this the way that he did it. Cow Palace is historically a tremendous building for pro wrestling, you know, back in the 70s and such. I think if they ever come back here, they got to run San Jose. I think that is what I have sort of come to conclusion about with the lack of interest in this show.
So tell me, educated a dumb New Yorker here. Why San Jose over where they're currently booking?
So San Francisco has not had professional wrestling in a very long time. And this is the Golden State Warriors used to play in Oakland. Oakland had WWE pay-per-views. I've been to several WWE pay-per-views in Oakland. And San Jose has WWE pay-per-views. San Francisco never even had a building, really, of a basketball arena magnitude until just recently when the Warriors moved from Oakland to San Francisco. So WWE tried to run in San Francisco. I think they did a Raw, and they did like 4,000 people. So it's just not been a wrestling hotbed. But again, it is a prestigious arena because of the Warriors being the NBA champions. So Tony, with the sports mindset, I get why he wanted to run that building. That is for Revolution. And they're like, I don't know, 9,000, 8,000, something like that for a basketball-sized arena for their pay-per-view. That's got to be a bit of a disappointment. And for
right now, 7,400.
Okay, so even less than 8,000. So for the Cow Palace, I think they're good. They're at less than four. I went to a New Japan show like 5 years ago, and I think they did seven, at least six or seven for that New Japan show in the Cow Palace. So this AEW Dynamite is going to do less than that. Now, some of this is because this is on a Wednesday. People are working. Like, I just took days off of work to go to these shows because I didn't really want to be bothered by, you know, having to rush around. So I did, but not everyone's going to be able to do that, right? And these shows seem very cold in the market. But I do think if we did Dynamite at the San Jose State Event Center, which is where that historical NXT show was run, WrestleMania 31 weekend with Charlotte and Sasha, if they ran that building instead, they would have done much better. And then I would have run where the San Jose Sharks play. Now, part of my calculus in that is not knowing if WWE has a hold on those buildings, because if they do and you can't really do them, then okay, I get it. But yeah, it's just very cold out here right now. But that is not to say that I'm not excited, because I am excited. I have never been to a Dynamite before, so I'm pretty fired up to go tomorrow.
So as of February 22nd, which was 6 days ago, AEW Dynamite tomorrow night from the Cow Palace has 3,300 tickets distributed. Okay, so obviously it's going to be a little bit more than that, but 3,300. Yeah. There's 2,200 for Rampage.
This building, historically, holds like 14,000 people for wrestling.
Yeah. Now, also, it's on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that's the other part of this.
That's the other part of this.
You know, it's
that's why it's hard running West Coast, man. You know, it is really hard.
Maybe they're
for
not as hot as they thought. Maybe they're not as hot. You know, that's a problem. They're not as hot. I mean, they did move some tickets from February 8th to February 22nd. They moved only. Wow, that's terrible. From February 8th to February 22nd. They only moved a few hundred tickets for the show. So it is cold.
I have seen advertising on the Warriors games for Revolution. I have not seen any local advertising for Dynamite, except I think it was last week on SmackDown. And maybe this happened on Raw, but I probably zipped through the commercial on Raw. They're selling Dynamite and Rampage, you know, two tickets combined for a cheaper price. With good old Jim Ross's voice on the voiceover on WWE television, which I think is smart, because he's the voice that you'd remember if you're a WWE fan and not an AEW fan.
The reality is they don't really have, like, what's the match you want to see at this pay-per-view at Revolution? Like, what's the match for you?
Yeah, there's no, like, match on this show where I'm like, man, that's a matchup that I've always wanted to see and never been able to see. I think Danielson is the closest thing to it for me.
Yeah.
If they hadn't run Moxley and Hangman into the ground, that would be it. But we've just seen it so much. We've seen it so much.
So much, yeah. We've seen that 1,000 times. Danielson, MJF, it's an Iron Man match. Historically, I think this is going to be a great one. My own bias because of who's in it. But historically, you know, it takes a lot of interest to be interested in a 1 hour match. The tag match, really, the tag division, I'm not really thrilled about it. Right.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's not a lot of hot. And again, the show's going to be fine. I rarely have any. There's never been a pay per view I watched for AEW where I said, "Wow, that was terrible." I mean, the pandemic era stuff. Yeah, maybe there was stuff that wasn't great, but I think this would be a fine show. I just don't think they have a hot program right now that I'm just vested in. Where, oh my god, I need to go. Listen, I flew to Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. I flew to Vegas knowing that there was a risk I had to come back early, and I did come back early, yeah. But I still flew to Vegas because I wanted to see the show.
Yeah.
Would I fly for this, you know, other than to hang out with you and Dave? Really, the wrestling is not what's drawing me.
If you flew out for this,
we would have had a blast.
We would have had the big time sushi night for sure.
Oh,
we,
like, yeah.
Shut down. We show up for dinner at the sushi spot and we just shut it down. Like, that's what would have happened. This still has to happen.
That would have been awesome. It will happen.
You know, the best selling point for this MJF Danielson match to me was what they just did last. And it wasn't the promos. I'm kind of over the MJF promo right now, but it was Danielson running at full speed with the camera perfectly placed, Danielson coming towards us and clocking MJF.
Yeah.
I thought he punched that dude in the face for real. Like, oh, that was so great.
I mean, he sold it like a sack of shit, just falling. Listen, man, MJ is fantastic.
So great, though, that I thought, oh, my God, did he, like, was that a little too stiff? But I haven't heard anything about, have you heard anything about, like,
no.
Okay. It just worried me when I saw it.
I thought he killed him.
Oh, my God.
You know how I know it was bad? So when I was watching it with Jess, like, I'll always watch Dynamite with Jess, and she doesn't mind it, really.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put it on, like, she does one of these. Like, you know, she's on her phone. She's, like, looking up whenever there's, like, a big thing. She happened to be watching. She goes, holy shit. And I was like, okay, that got her. You know, like,
yeah,
that worked.
Totally.
When she responds to this, because she has very little interest in it, Then I know it worked.
All right. So
for the bleeding, she'll always pop for the blood.
So for Rampage, I'm sorry, not for Rampage, for Dynamite, they have the Battle Royal, the Casino Battle Royal, which is for that fourth team in the match for the tag team titles. There is a mystery team via the Joker. They are definitely trying to get us to think that FTR is going to be in that Joker spot based off of just things that are happening in social media. They are the perfect team for that Joker spot. So I hope that that happens. But do you sense, you know, because I've always said that the great thing about Tony Khan when it comes to the surprise is that he's leading us there. But at the same time, we're still not 100% sure. So there's, like, this small percentage of us where we're like, there's still a little bit of doubt, and that's why we have to tune in. Now, you and I are tuning in anyways, but just for the common wrestling fan. So the Casino Tag Battle Royal, if FTR is that in that Joker spot, fantastic, right? It just makes that show better, and it makes Revolution better, because I don't like the four team thing. I would rather have been just the Guns versus the Acclaimed. But if you're gonna add another team and it's FTR, I'm like, okay, that's gonna make the match better because those guys are so good.
Darby and Sting.
You think?
And they cost Jarrett the title, and on Dynamite you have Jeff Jarrett versus Sting.
You could go that way. You could definitely go that way.
You could do that.
That would be a nice second thing, I think. If you don't go the FTR route, I actually kind of like that.
I would want FTR because that they would revitalize, obviously, that division. It's a little not great right now, but FTR would be the tag team that could kind of do that and bring it back, and you know, they could win the titles. Maybe the Bucks lose, you know, the trios titles, and you kind of do that split, and you finally have that match happen eventually.
Yeah,
you know, you have so many different outcomes. A lot of people are going based on what they're saying on the podcast. You know what Dax is saying on the podcast. Listen, they're wrestlers and they're working and they're wrestlers. So,
yep.
You know, I think everything that people say, especially on a podcast, I don't really take it for as the gospel. Like Chris Jericho said, he'll never go back to WWE. I don't believe that for a second.
Hall of Fame, baby.
Yeah, man, he's a Hall of Famer. Of course, how could he not go back if he can? You know, he doesn't have any ill will towards the company, but eventually he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Eventually they'll call him in. Maybe they'll show up at another Rumble. You know,
are they even doing a Hall of Fame this year? I've heard nothing about Hall of Fame.
Okay. Isn't Batista headlining? Isn't that the rumor?
But I haven't heard them say anything on TV about this Hall of Fame, and we're like a month out.
Maybe Dwayne not signing on board kind of threw a monkey wrench in this, huh?
Maybe.
Okay, those XFL numbers are not great.
Well, let's see what the USFL numbers are going to be, because I think what they may have done, they may have splintered this non-NFL audience in half, and we may see the USFL do very similar numbers this time, but we'll see. Okay, a couple other things just before we get out of here. I have a Dark Horse Revolution match that I'm very excited to see. I think I'll step back one. The face of the Revolution ladder match, which is on Wednesday, if Powerhouse Hobbs wins it at the Cow Palace, you'll get a giant pop. If Eddie wins it, you'll get a giant pop too. But you'll get the hometown pop if Powerhouse Hobbs wins this ladder match. I think that should happen. And it'll be a great moment on Wednesday. But I wanted to ask you, we get to this pay-per-view. What is the dark horse match that you want to see? Because I have one. And we'll quickly go over the matches. MJF and Danielson, 60-minute match. Jamie Hayter versus Ruby versus Saraya. Samoa Joe versus Wardlow. Guns versus The Acclaim versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal and the To Be Determined team. The Elite versus House of Black for the trios. Starks against Jericho. Everyone is banned from ringside. And Moxley versus Hangman. Out of those matches, what is your dark horse match of the night?
Ah, man, Samoa Joe Wardlow?
That's mine.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, honestly, I'm not blown away by this card. Okay. No. Not that it's not, I'm not going to enjoy it or anything, but
I'm going to have a blast at the show, but I get it.
You know what? If Danielson wins the title, then I would say that it would pique some sort of interest. I don't want MJF to lose, but I also think Danielson winning the title from him in this upset, you know, because a lot of people don't expect MJF to win, Danielson to win, would kind of, you know, they need to get into something that's going to draw me to Wednesday. Not, I'm watching every week, but there's a lot of people that aren't, and something like that would draw them. But Danielson, but Samoa Joe Wardlow, I'm very much looking forward to this. You could kind of revitalize Wardlow again after, you know, a disappointing second half of the year doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it would be that, you know, Jericho Ricky Starks could be a crazy top tier match also.
Yeah.
It's another
one. Starks has got to be elevated in this thing, because I talked about this on the Fight Game podcast last week. They have an opportunity to make some really good baby faces. Starks has to be one of those guys.
Yeah. Well, they have. I mean, you brought up Hobbs, right? Hobbs is one guy. Starks is another guy. Wardlow's another guy. They got to elevate. You know, I could tell that Max Caster, you know, he's eventually going to be a huge star for them. You could tell it just by, you know, how he is. But, you know, the other part is, you know, House of Black, you got Malakai Black there. Why is he in a trios? Why is he not wrestling singles? Why is Buddy Murphy not in that All-Atlantic international title position?
That's a good question. I don't know. And I think it's because Tony wanted to show that you had a trios division. And in order to do that, you had to have these very important wrestlers in the trios division to make it seem important. I just don't think it's worked that well.
But the matches, is what makes it important, not the characters in it, right? Because it's such a spot show more than I'm saying that in the positive way. It's all the spots and the big, you know, the things that you could do with three people opposed to two people or one. That's what sells those trios. And to be honest, there's so many other teams out there that could use that elevation of having that title coming out and having those matches. rather than the Bucks and Kenny. I don't, you know, well deserving. They're great, but get them to do something else. You're kind of set. Think about this, right? You've taken no knock at Brody, right? Brody King, no knock at him. He could be a huge big man. But if you've taken Buddy Matthews out of this, you've taken Malachi Black out of this, you've taken the Young Bucks and Kenny out of top tier singles positions in the company. Or top in the tag division. You know, more the Bucks than anything else. But I'm talking 1, 2, 3, 4 singles guys that are really great that are not in singles matches.
Yes. And you're a little handicapped on this show because your main event's going 60.
Yeah. This is a 5-hour pay-per-view.
Yep. It is. Okay. I just noticed the time. We don't want to get in trouble here. We do need to get out of here, but this has been a blast. Next week, I'll have some live thoughts on the whole weekend. But for Andrew, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.